episode 53, talking about Bitcoin with Tone Vase.
Interested in Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is a very vague concept to a lot of people.
Need to know more about cryptocurrency?
We're going
to
talk about the basics. You know, this is something that people just have no idea about what crypto is.
How about buying, selling, and mining?
Tony, I think that's one of the things that's going to make us a little different from some other shows.
We're getting our hands dirty.
Then listen to Gary Leland and Tony Sakala, better known as the Crypto Cousins, on the Crypto Cousins Podcast. This week's price.
Price of Bitcoin, $6,365. That's down $197.24, or 3.1% over the last 7 days. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Welcome to the show. Gary Leland here.
And this is Tony Sakala.
Tony, you know, I thought all week that we were going to have 2 weeks in a row that Bitcoin was up. And then last night, the bottom fell out of it and screwed me.
Well, we've heard this before. We've heard this before. Our guest today has been calling for further bear movements. He really understands the lines a lot better than I do. That's for sure. Tone really understands the lines. I look at the lines and I have no idea what's going on.
Oh, that's his deal.
He seems to really understand, and he's been right very, very in many, many, many cases.
Yeah, he understands a lot more than I do, I have to agree. You know, to me, he had a lot of guts to bet Doug Polk $10,000 that Bitcoin was going to drop under $6,000, and that's when Bitcoin was around $10,000. So, I mean, and I guess
put
Doug,
his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, and I guess Doug felt like that was a safe bet and had to pay off $10,000, which we'll talk about in the show there. So, yeah, he kind of saw this coming, I guess you could say.
He really did.
So what do you got here? Bancor loses $13.5 million from smart contracts. I'm not familiar with this. Tell me about this.
So, you know, once again, smart contracts, not so smart. The Bancor exchange had $13.5 million stolen from a smart contract. It turns out there was some sort of a backdoor written into the smart contract. And, you know, this sort of thing was written about like last year on the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute website. You know, there were articles about that, you know, how these backdoors could be put in and how these centralized exchanges, once again, are showing to be the least effective way to store your money in crypto.
So you're not a centralized exchange person.
I mean, I'm really just screaming at people all the time, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. It's just really sad because it happens so regularly. You'd think people would finally get the message.
Well, they don't. Yeah, like I said, I can see having a little bit of crypto on exchange for trading.
Right, yeah. If you want to put it on there, trade away.
Use that as your wallet.
$13 million. I mean, you know.
That's a lot of people using it as their wallet.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, you know, I wonder what happens with a new crypto, Tony, when there's really not a wallet available for it.
Well, I guess the any new crypto is, I mean, the basis of it is that there's a wallet. I mean, that's, you have to make private keys. There has to be some sort of wallet. So even though the wallet may be command line interface, you know, they tend to start with something.
Mm. There's some kind of wallet or else they're not coming out with you. It may not be Jax or Exodus or Treasure, but there's some kind of wallet for every crypto.
Yeah, they'll just clone the Electrum wallet, which is a popular one, and then just change the wording. And people
don't want to go set up a new wallet probably a lot of times because it is a little bit of work. I think that's one of the problems with the cryptos is it's a lot of work still.
It's still so, you know, we keep saying it's 1993. Someone last night said, you know what, we're still in the 70s and 80s, I mean, in terms of usability.
Right, right. And so for the non-techie, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. It's incredibly hard.
Well, my news is a little bit more on the lighter side.
A little lighter? Oh, good, good.
You know, because I know that you have been wanting to get a new car, but you haven't wanted a Lamborghini to buy with your Bitcoin.
I've been taking pictures of Lambos.
and dreams of buying one?
Let's just say just becoming familiar with the brand.
Well, I don't know that I could get in a Lambo because I'm 6 foot. And I've lost a lot of weight, so weight-wise I probably could. But I've been told if you're over 5'10", you can't really drive a Lambo. So I'm 6 foot, so... my neighbor down the street has a Lambo. I want to get in it. I asked him if he bought it with Bitcoin. Or his kid was out watching it, and I said, did your dad buy this with Bitcoin? Because I don't know the guy. And he goes, no. I said, okay, just he might have been a Bitcoin millionaire for all I knew.
Right, down your street, exactly.
I don't know the guy.
Strange things have happened.
But he said, no, he bought it. So I've been wanting to get in his car just to see how it fits. But I have a feeling it's not going to be comfortable with me, but I wouldn't mind having a BMW. And you can now buy – a BMW with Bitcoin.
Oh, right here in Dallas?
No. You can't do it here in Dallas.
No, oh, no.
Dallas would just be the place you'd go for Lambos, probably. You have to go to the UK. There's a car dealership in the UK, Stephen James BMW Group. It's a pretty large dealership in London and Kent, but they now accept Bitcoin for cars. So it's probably more of a publicity stunt than anything.
Sounds like a publicity stunt. And then if you buy one there, Gary, you know what's going to happen to the steering wheel. It's going to be on the wrong side.
Well, maybe I'm going to move over there. How do you not know that?
That's true.
I'm thinking about picking up, moving to London, and becoming an illegal alien over there getting me a BMW.
Uh-huh. Well, it's quite possible.
Yeah, because I don't think they'd let me stay there very long, so I'm going to have to be on the hiding. But if you're in Europe and you want a BMW, no, I wouldn't mind having a BMW. I wouldn't want a Lambo, but I wouldn't mind having a BMW. So hopefully someday other cars will be for sale in the U.S. and my Bitcoin will do like John McAfee says and be worth $1 million, and I can go buy one with like a tenth of a Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to.
So that's my news is buy a Bitcoin, BMW with Bitcoin. Hey, and also, Tony, this weekend is BitBlock Boom this Saturday.
It's coming up. Hard to believe.
I have 11 days in counting, but it's like 4 days, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's like 4 days now. So,
this is the last time the cousins have to hear us pushing it.
Well, we've got a lot of local cousins coming, and we've got some folks who've bought some Ethan mining machines from us coming out, and we've got some folks that we've met at local meetups coming out, and we do have folks flying in from around the country. It is going to be a beautiful hotel. The Renaissance Hotel in Addison is a beautiful place to stay if you're flying in. We've got great speakers from the Bitcoin Maximalist School of Bitcoin, Pierre Richard and Michael Goldstein, running the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, are really spearheading the effort to get people to think about Bitcoin, not blockchain. And of course, Dr. Saifedean Ammous, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, is going to be giving the keynote address. And so we're going to really get a sense for the importance of sound money. And the Austrian School of Money folks are really going to be happy if they come out and hear this and get their book signed by Dr. Ammous. So that's going to be this Saturday, all day, starting at 8 a.m. till about 6 p.m. The conference is going to be here in Addison. And there's still time to buy tickets. And because you're listening, we have a half price code of cousins. So if you use the word cousins when you sign up on Eventbrite for the promotional code, the price will drop to right now just under $160. So that's a huge deal for a conference.
That is a huge deal. What time? Because I know you have it set up for a time. Do you know what time Saifedean is signing his books?
You were doing that right after lunch. He'll probably do it in the morning, too, if you get there early for registration. But we have a plan to do that like 1:30, 2 o'clock.
I was just saying, if you know, with the way we have that laid out, the booths are in like a forum before you get into the event. So if someone's local and they want to come meet Saifedean and get a book signed – you know, and buy a book from him or see the vendors, I would think that we could let them do that. Even they just couldn't go into the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? If they wanted to get a book signed. Yeah. Well, if they get there in the morning, you know, we'll extort another $160 out of them.
Yes.
And then we'll say, even though at the door, the price is going to be $599, if someone asks very nicely and they listen to this episode, they might get in for less.
Yeah, that sounds like a fair thing to say. And we don't have a problem with them buying a copy because we want to support Safe at End. So we don't have a problem. But we also, while I'm thinking about, want to thank Casey Watkins, our platinum mm-hmm. sponsor from CryptoUnicorn.money. He's been kind enough to be our platinum sponsor, so make sure and check out his website. And he'll also have a booth there, and that's CryptoUnicorn.money. Hey, Tony, we got a question here.
Mm-hmm.
And we like questions. This is an email question, but you can just let me people know you can email us questions at thecryptocousins@gmail.com. Or call us with a question at 747-777-9471. And this question is really one of your questions, Tony, so I'm going to read it and let you answer it. Hi, cousins. My understanding is that you owned Bitcoin before all the hard forks occurred. Then you would have some of the forked crypto as well. Is that true? And if so, do you know how one would go about accessing their new crypto if they've been using a SPV wallet? So, Tony, you've been doing this since Bitcoin was 100, so I would say that's before all the forks occurred.
That's before there were any forks, yes, that's for sure.
So that's true.
The problem with forks is that sometimes you get an airdrop and sometimes you don't get an airdrop. So just having a fork doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more coin. For instance, I'm guessing that you're talking about Bitcoin, maybe not, maybe one of the others, but Bitcoin's obviously been one of the most forked. And we've got Bitcoin Gold, and that did its thing and did an airdrop, and folks got that, which now, right, Bitcoin Gold, now Bitcoin is over 6,000, and Bitcoin Gold is like, I don't know, it's like $20. I mean, it's not pretty. So you're just going to get a few pennies there. And then the big one, of course, on August 1st was Bitcoin Cash. And Bitcoin Cash forked and copied over, basically copied the entire Bitcoin blockchain and did an airdrop. And so if you have your own private keys, if your wallet is one where you have the private keys, then you can actually have some of that Bitcoin Cash. But if your Bitcoin was in Coinbase, then they had the choice of whether to give you the Bitcoin Cash, and they did. So you should see it there.
Well, he said he had an SPV wallet. What is an SPV? What does that mean?
That's just like a Airbits wallet or a Green wallet or Samurai wallet. And each of those wallets can choose whether or not they want to support the airdrop. So, there are lots of forks that are just really small names that you don't hear about, and they don't want to support them. But the big ones, Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Cash, generally, or Bitcoin Diamond, will be supported. But I don't know which SPV wallet you had, so I would check with the website of the SPV wallet vendor, so like Green Wallet or Airbits or Samurai Wallet, and then see if they supported it. And if they did, you either will see a tab with the new coin listed and you'll see what you have, or you may have to click a few settings and turn that coin on.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I hope that, Cousin Christian, I hope that answered your question. I don't know if I mentioned that the question was from Cousin Christian. And like I said, let us know if you have any questions. We're happy to answer them. I guess we should start moving to the interview. Since the show is, as normal, going to go a little over.
Yes, yes.
Today's
yes.
interview is with Tone Vase. You want to tell us a little about Tone?
Well, Tone is the host of the Crypto Scam Podcast, and his expertise is in economic trends, trading, and risk analysis. He was a Wall Street insider for nearly 10 years, starting out as a risk analyst at Bear Stearns and later becoming a vice president at JPMorgan Chase in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. He's been around for a long time, and his knowledge of risk and how markets move has been brought into the crypto space, and he's one of the most visible faces in crypto trading and one of the most successful people at plotting these different trends. He's very knowledgeable, very well respected, and he's a fun guy too. So we really had an enjoyable time having an interview with Tone.
I did enjoy talking to Tone, and he's a smart dude too. Well, let's go to the interview. Well, Tone, thanks for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it.
Hello, Tone.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be on.
I watch you all the time on YouTube, so I feel like I know you. Know it's that TV personality identity. You see someone so often, you feel like you know them already. And you give a lot of great information on your show. And I want to know, because some of our audience might not be familiar with you, could you kind of give us a scoop on how you got into finance and how you got into Bitcoin, your financial background and how you got into Bitcoin?
Sure. Well, I got into finance because I wanted to make some money, because being a high school teacher was not going to do it for me. So 1 year of being a high school teacher was enough for me to say, hey, you know what? I need to actually get my life together. And I went and got a master's in financial engineering. It took a little while to find a good job because I didn't have any experience, but learning some database skills and getting a little better at my programming, Excel and VBA helped a lot. I got my first gig at Bear Stearns in their risk analysis unit. A year and a half later, Bear Stearns goes under in the financial crash, end up at JP Morgan, same unit. They took it over. Then they sold our unit to a company. We didn't like it, weren't happy. I learned what an M&A is, the inner workings of that, was responsible for some major overhaul projects in data migration, and you know, joined a bunch of guys in a different company rebuilding what we used to do at Bear and JP Morgan. So I kind of hung around that risk industry, but we were doing risk of like equity assets and stuff like that. My true passion was always trading, and I always wanted to quit my job and be a trader. I finally got a chance to do that in 2015, quit my job and be a trader. And I had a bunch of other backup plans. One of them was I was already becoming a popular Bitcoiner from my articles in Cointelegraph and then a couple of other publications. I already started speaking at a bunch of places, already started becoming a guest on some podcasts. And that was one backup plan, started a physical business in New Jersey, another backup plan. And my trading, I just didn't want to work for anyone anymore. And, you know, trading was cool for a little while, but I got really busy being this personality in the crypto space. There was enough demand for me to have my own YouTube channel. And now that takes up all my time. Not much time left for trading. Not much time left to manage that business. So that's it. So right now, I'm just a YouTuber creating content. Travel the world, speak at conferences about Bitcoin and crypto and trading, and I love it. That's pretty much my quick background of how I got here.
And is your YouTube channel just Tone Vase, in case people want to find it?
Yeah, it's just Tone Vase. I mean, I was under other brands before, like World Crypto Network, but it's easier for me to just brand it, everything under Tone Vase. I moved my website over to Tone Vase as well. So everything is just Tone Vase. I'm just a one-man operation. I have a couple of people that are helping me out. But yeah, let's see where this goes. I mean, trading isn't going anywhere. I can always go back to that. The problem that I run into is I both interview people and I get interviewed. And my expertise is trading because I have 15 years experience. But my passion is evangelizing Bitcoin and explaining to people what a blockchain really is. So I fall into this like no man's land of a jack of all trades, kind of like my job was at back in the Wall Street space. I'm not very good at specializing at one thing. I really like being all over the place. It seems to work for me over the years.
Well, you're talking to a bunch of solopreneur and entrepreneurs. You know, neither Gary and I have worked for the man in a long, long time. And we know exactly what you're talking about, because this space is a lot of people mixing it up. We interview people, we go on the road, we've spoken at Bitcoin conferences, and it is our passion, as we've discovered, to let people know what the real story is with Bitcoin. Because of the FUD, because of all the attacks out there, I think you're doing a great job of being a Bitcoin evangelist.
Thank you.
So you teach classes too, though. I've seen you teaching classes across the country, across the world. and you fill them up with quite a few people.
I do. It was actually interesting when I started my own YouTube channel and I was putting in so much time sending out tweets, you know, trying to get followers, making YouTube videos, trying to get followers. And everyone around me kept saying, hey, how are you going to make money? How are you going to monetize all this? Because again, there wasn't much time for trading. I was too focused on Bitcoin evangelism. And I kept saying, you know what? Eventually, there'll be a way to monetize. I have no idea what it is, but there will have to be a way to monetize once I become popular enough and important enough. And then it just, you know, jumped out kind of on its own. There was so much demand for people that needed to learn how to be better traders. And I now do, like, every couple of weeks, I do a workshop, a full-day boot camp on teaching people the basics of technical analysis and trading. And my co-host on my podcast, Jimmy Song, is now doing something similar for development, trying to educate people to be better developers. He's got a two-day boot camp with his courses. And it seems to be a great way to monetize because I never liked subscriptions. I never liked forcing people to keep paying me for something. I always like a one-off. Hey, pay me a consulting fee. If you have to pay me again, I didn't do my job. Hey, I'm teaching a workshop. Come to me for 7 hours, learn the basics of trading. If you have to attend again, I didn't do my job.
Well, on your classes now, you charge what, 0.5 of a Bitcoin? Or
0.1
Bitcoin, no matter what Bitcoin is. So right now, people taking it are getting a real good deal.
Yeah, but in reality, when the price of Bitcoin drops, I get less demand.
Oh, yes, we certainly know that.
I think that's across the board on everything, though, Tone. Whether it's a conference, whether it's your class, whether it's our podcast downloads, I think that's everything.
Right, but I denominate in Bitcoin, right? So you would think that fiat perspective, my price is cheaper when the price of Bitcoin falls.
Right, right. So yeah, you would think more people would want to take advantage of
right,
it.
Right, but in reality, when a person has, let's say, 10 Bitcoin to their name, and while price of Bitcoin is $20,000, they're sitting on $200,000. It's not a big deal to spend $2,000 on a one-day workshop. When the price of Bitcoin falls to $5,000, now you only have $50,000 to your name, and spending $500 of that on anything is scary.
Even though it's the same percentage.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I see what you're saying there, but does that not fall into the same thing that all these people that you're telling to invest in Bitcoin while it's $5,000, when it hits 16, they're all going to be calling me and going, Gary, what was that you were telling me about Bitcoin?
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. And eventually, this is how you know there is a bubble brewing.
Yes.
Because of the fact all of a sudden these people who didn't want to get in earlier are wanting to get in
right. While
the price is high.
And when all of these people keep saying how I'm going to buy so much Bitcoin when it hits a certain price, one of two things is going to happen. Either it's not going to go down to that price and all those people are going to keep waiting, or it's going to blow right through that price. Markets have a way of rebounding from a pricing point that is the most inconvenient for the majority of the people.
Can you say that again?
Markets have a way of rebounding from a price point that is the most inconvenient for the maximum amount of people. So if too many people are expecting to buy Bitcoin just under $3,000, it will either go significantly lower than that, or it's not going to reach $3,000.
Well, speaking of price points, and I just think this is funny. I love Doug Polk's show, and you were on Doug's show not too long ago. And y'all made, if I'm correct, a $10,000 bet. Is that right?
Yeah, I tried to weasel out of it, but he baited me into it really nicely. Kind of put my pride on the line there.
And the bet was that Bitcoin wouldn't go under, is it 6,000?
6,000, correct.
You said it would, and you've been saying for quite a while, because I've been watching your shows, you've been saying for quite a while that Bitcoin's going to go down. This was no surprise to you, what's been happening.
By the way, at the time, the price of Bitcoin was about $9,500, and it had just fallen from 10,000.
But you've been saying this since it was like 12 or 13.
Pretty much. I remember as far back as mid-January when I did a show from Thailand with one of my friends out there who's a trader, and we were both pretty pessimistic. He was more pessimistic than me, price of Bitcoin was probably in the $13,000 to $15,000 range. And he still thinks we're going to 2,000. And I mean, my worst target is 1,300, but I was as sure as anything that we will go to 5,000, and I'm still am.
Okay, so you still think that's what we're going to hit?
I still think we're going to hit at least 5,000 and probably lower.
And, well, you've been correct so far.
Look, I want to be wrong, right? I mean, I'm fully hedged. I haven't been selling my Bitcoin. I'm still holding on to it. It's more important to me than making a few extra Bitcoin than holding on to my Bitcoin, because when it reverses, I don't know how fast it can reverse. I don't know what's going to happen. I like my Bitcoin in cold storage, and that's where it's staying for the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, Tony, you and Tone have a lot of an agreement on this.
Yes, I'm definitely a hodler of last resort.
Well, let me get back to Doug Polk. Did Doug pay you?
Yes, okay. He did.
I had a feeling he would. He just seemed like the kind of guy who would not welch in his bet to me. I've never met him.
Yeah, no, Doug is a man of his word. I had him on my podcast after. I question a lot of his investment decisions. Not that one, but I was happy to question that investment decision. But like I question a lot of his investments in the altcoin space and in the ICO space. But sooner or later, like, he will understand that it's just Bitcoin and everything else is a penny stock.
Right. I've heard you say that before. Can you kind of give me what you and your feeling short term and long term is for Bitcoin?
Okay, so we have to define short-term and long-term. There's also an intermediate term right there. Short-term is always the hardest to predict, but it tends to be the easiest one to make money on as like a day trader, right? Like the majority of traders trade short-term. If you're good, you can consistently make profits. I really thought we can go down to my $5,000 target in the first half of July. We bounced in the last 3 to 4 days here in the last few days of June, actually on the last day of June. And it's possible that my $5,000 target will not be hit in the first couple of weeks of July, in which case I will delay that target into, let's say, early August. But right now, we seem to be going up from 5,800 and we've gone up all the way to 6,600. My most reasonable high is about 7,000 in the very near future. I mean, worst case scenario for the bears, we could go as high as 8,000. But I can't see it going higher than that because I still think the bear market is going to play out. After it reaches a top somewhere between now and my best guess is 7,000, I am expecting my $5,000 bottom. From the $5,000 bottom, we can easily go back to 8,000. From there, it gets interesting. If we do reach, if the bottom is already in, I will consider becoming a bull of Bitcoin once again above 12,000. If we hit 5,000 sometime this summer, I would need us to go above 10,000 to become a bull again. But if we go towards my most pessimistic bearish target of $1,300 sometime late this year. After that, if we hit 1,300 or if we hit 2,000 or 3,000, after that, I will only need us to get back to 6,000 before I become a bull again. So for me to go from bearish to bullish, the target, the bullish, the increase, I would need to see at least 100% move in the price of Bitcoin before I consider the bear market to be over. And while many people think that's crazy, it's really not, because when we had the 2014 bear market and the price of Bitcoin fell from $1,200 all the way to a low of $150, it's not a big deal to wait for the price to get back above $300 for a 100% increase and then becoming a bull. Because look what happened after we got above $300 back in late 2015. It went from 300 all the way to 20,000. Like, it's so much more important to avoid a 50% drop in prices. But once you're convinced that the bull market is here, it doesn't really matter if you recognize the bull market from 2,000 or from 12,000. because it's likely to go all the way up to 50 or 100K.
Wow.
What about, though, I hear all the time, Tone, or recently I've been hearing, for instance, that one of the biggest things that have been preventing Bitcoin from reaching the kind of highs it can reach is the fact that commercial investments can't be made because of custody. Now you've got Coinbase custody. That custody is the big issue, and when that was done, all these people are going to pour in with their investment company. What's the scoop on that? How does that affect anything?
Well, everyone is upset they missed the bull run. And when the price of Bitcoin reaches these crazy levels, all of a sudden, everybody is interested. Again, I keep making comparisons to 2014. When the price of Bitcoin went up from $10 to $1,000 in 2013, that's when you heard all of these businesses starting to accept Bitcoin. Like, God, I remember the year 2014. There used to be headlines. Expedia now accepts Bitcoin. Dish Network now accepts Bitcoin. This company, that company now accepts Bitcoin. Stripe now accepts Bitcoin. I think all of those companies no longer accept Bitcoin except Expedia. Like, they've all stopped. Because then the bear market comes. Nobody uses this stuff. And people forget. And companies just let it go. So same thing here. You know, when a price of Bitcoin is reaching $20,000, everyone wants this thing, like they call it custody or whatever. But in reality, now that the price of Bitcoin is going down, people are going to care a lot less. And this is how markets find a way to, if it was easy, everybody would be a billionaire.
Right.
So all of the people that got in at the wrong time, and I think all of the people that are rushing in to buy now, if you're willing to sustain a 50% hit to your investment, clearly you and I are, because we're both hodlers. I've been through this before. I have enough liquid money to last me a couple of years, so I'm willing to wait. But some of these guys can't wait. They have investors. They have, you know, wives that will yell at them. So you don't know what happens when your investment loses 50% of its value. And when the last guy finally gives up and sells, that's when it can finally bottom. When there's nobody left to sell, the only place prices can go is up.
I like that viewpoint. Yes, when the last guy sells, that's what we're seeing. We know what happens when.
Yeah, and because a lot of these, this custody and a lot of this ease for Wall Street will now be in place, it sets up Bitcoin to go way past 20,000 next time.
So when it does drop to its bottom and goes up, then we could have even a bigger bull market than we had this last time, is what you're saying, because of the custody and the thing, and maybe ETFs might be in place by then.
Oh, yeah. And Lightning is going to be in place. So Bitcoin will be convenient for micropayments. And some businesses will start to utilize these micropayments. And more importantly, it's confidence. Like, Bitcoin has been around for 7 years. Back in the 2013 bubble, it's only been around for 4 years. Now it's 9. By the time the next bull market is in full swing, Bitcoin will be over 10 years old with almost no downtime, no problems. You know, it's pretty decentralized. It's infinitely more decentralized than any of its competitors. And it'll be confidence for people, right? There'll be teenagers using Bitcoin in the next bull market that, as far as they're concerned, it has always existed. Kind of like, you know, if you guys have kids, as far as they're concerned, the internet has been around for a century. Because in their life, it's been there from the beginning. Meanwhile, guys like us still remember how to drive a car without GPS.
and having to use a paper map.
Right?
You know, right, and do things like memorize phone numbers.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I don't even know phone numbers now. I don't even know my kids' phone numbers. But I used to know every phone number, and I used to consider myself really good at that. So you're definitely correct on that. But let me ask you a question. Now, like, there's people like Tom Lee, who's into investments, that has his misery index. Are you familiar with that, what I'm talking about?
Not really. I know he's a big bull. I don't think he called this bear market anywhere near as good as I have.
No, I'm not saying he had, but he has this thing about the misery index, that people are so miserable that.
Well, how does he know that? I mean, like, I'm not miserable. The price of Bitcoin has fallen 75%. I'm more popular than ever. I kind of like the bear market. It makes me stick it to people that are irrational.
So you're not putting a lot of sense into this misery index.
I'm curious what his metric is, right? I mean, people are pretty miserable with guys like me that have been calling the bear market correctly. I don't think people are miserable yet. I mean, people aren't panic selling yet. People are upset. They're blaming manipulation. I mean, people have to rage quit Bitcoin, and a lot of them have, and they went over to Bcash. But I think that, I mean, I remember in the last bear market, a lot of like big famous Bitcoiners like Mike Hearn had like famous, you know, exits. And some of the other people that were calling Bitcoin is dead. I think that this time around, what you're looking for are major VCs that were, you know, going on television talking about how Bitcoin is going to be $100,000. And they were buying, you know, so much Bitcoin for their clients in the hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins. I think when those guys give up, is when the bear market's going to end.
Mm.
So, but I don't know how he measures the misery index, because it has to be more than the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he measures it either. I just know he charts it somehow. And that's his big thing that he's always talking about, it seems like to me, is the misery index. And that the misery index has bottomed out, and that's why he's predicting 25,000 by the end of the year.
Oh, I will take the opposite of that one. I mean, when it goes up, it'll go up quickly, but I mean, by delaying the fall, I mean, if we go back to 7,000-8,000, and if we don't hit my $5,000 target until like September, October, then this bear market can stretch way into the winter, and we'll still be going down.
Right. I see. Okay, that makes
sense. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, I have not seen any misery yet, like out in the crypto space. Everyone is still running their ICOs. Everyone is still talking about how great Bitcoin is. Like, that's not misery. There was misery in the first half of 2015. Like significant companies were going under. No, I don't think we're anywhere near people's misery in general on this bear market.
Okay. So, Ken, let me ask you another question. Are we in a dead cat bounce? And what in the hell is a dead cat bounce? Because I don't even know. Would you explain that to me? Because I don't understand what that is.
Sure. So you heard of dip, right? Like everyone says, buy the dip.
You have that on your shirts all the time.
Right. That is so bad. Like you're never actually supposed to buy the dip. But it's a really fun slogan. But like a dead cat bounce is the opposite of buy the dip. So when prices go up and then they take a little break, and let's say they fall 5%, we say, hey, just fell 5%, buy the dip, and then it'll go back to new highs. A dead cat bounce is the opposite. So basically prices are going down and all of a sudden they're rising, but they're rising a little bit and then they're going to start falling even faster. So that little rise in the middle of a downtrend, it's called a dead cat bounce. Okay. I believe so, yeah. And I kept calling that the last time we bounced from 6,000 all the way to 10,000. I was calling that a dead cat bounce that lasted quite a bit of time. Like, I didn't think it would go all the way to 10,000 before going lower than 6, but it did. That one was significant. If that one made it all the way to 12,000, I would have had to flip from a bear to a bull. This one is coming up from 5,800. If we can make it all the way to 11,000, I will have to give up on my bear position. So as long as this rebound stays under 10,000, I'm bearish. Somewhere between 10 and 11,50, I'm neutral. Once it gets to like the $12,000 area, I'll be late to the bull market. But I don't care. That's responsible investing.
Wow. So if it makes it to 12, it's going to go, you think?
Yeah. But I don't think it's going to make it to 12. I'll be surprised if it goes above 7 before we start our approach down to 5K.
Tony, if you were like into investing and buying and selling, how, and you really believe it that much, how come you don't like sell off part of your Bitcoin to rebuy at a lower price?
This is going to be a very long answer. I have numerous reasons as to why. And some of it might actually get me in trouble, so I really should plead the fifth, okay, not to answer the question. However, I will say that I have acquired all of my Bitcoin with unregistered value, which means is I've bought it in cash on the street. So it's not recorded anywhere. So I have two choices now. I can either go back into the street and resell it, which could potentially be dangerous, not only... you know, I could get robbed, putting my life at risk. Also, what if I'm part of a sting operation? Though that one doesn't worry me as much. But the other situation is, if I decide to do it, you know, fully compliant, I now have to pay taxes on everything, and I can delay that. Like, as long as I don't sell my Bitcoin, I don't have to pay the government 45% because I'm a New York resident. And by me selling it and paying the government 45%, the next time I buy it back, I will have to do that again. So I almost have to, it's not that I have to be right about a 20% correction.
I see what you're saying.
I have to be right about a 60 or a 70% correction to make up for the tax liability. In addition.
That makes a lot of sense. I never thought about that, but you're right. That makes a lot of sense.
Right. And in the future, I can always move jurisdictions. Maybe I'll move to Puerto Rico and then I'll sell it in the future. And then it's, you know, I have to pay no taxes. Right. So I'm also have a long term perspective. And I also have I'm monetizing, like I'm earning Bitcoin, like I'm doing fine. I'm doing OK. Even if my net worth has shrunk 75%, my life's pretty cheap. I still drive my 10-year-old car. Like I'm not about the money anymore. Like if I was, it's like I tell people, if I was all about the money, I would still be working on Wall Street collecting a 100-figure salary. So I'm happy with what I'm doing. The other reason why I don't trade actively is because my life is too busy. I'm on airplanes all the time. As of September 1st, I literally travel for 4 months straight from country to country to country. Like I can't manage a trading account in that world.
Especially since it's a 24-hour trading, the boot.
Right. And even like my workshops, right? I'm teaching a full-day workshop. Like I don't get to look at the market except like the 1 or 2 hours where with my class, with my students, we do some, you know, fake trading, like as if we're pretending that it's real money, but we're doing some fake trading. But look, trading is a job. You can do it part-time, but it really depends on your lifestyle. And my lifestyle just isn't about that right now. I was a full-time trader in 2015 and 2016. But then in 2017, you know, I don't want to sound narcissistic here, but I became too popular to trade.
So, Tony, you have any questions? Because I know I've been hogging this all up here, so I don't want to.
Well, you know, you have such great questions, Gary. You guys are talking about the fundamentals and talking about what's going on with the price. But I'm a little bit more, as a hodler, you know, I'm just really not that interested in the money. I'm more interested in the stories from Consensus. I see you guys are having a good time out there in New York. Gary and I missed it because we were here in Texas. Tell us, you know, you're a Bitcoin maximalist, and we know how annoying they can be, we can be, to altcoiners. Give us a little background for the listeners. Why are you Bitcoin maximalist, and what is the point of it?
Sure. Oh, well, sorry. Go back to the last question. One more reason why I don't trade. I like being neutral. I don't want to put on a trade, and now I'm lying to my followers because I need to make money on my trade, which is also very important.
That is good.
Okay, so a lot of people think that people are Bitcoin maximalists because they missed out on other opportunities in making money in those other coins, or they somehow are short those coins and they need to make more money. In reality, it's the opposite. Now, it's funny, like today I watched this awesome documentary. I need to promote it. The documentary is called Dishonesty. It's a documentary about lying. And the majority of the people always think that you're lying to them because the majority of the people are always lying. And people seem to think that I have an agenda being a Bitcoin maximalist. The reality is everything else in the crypto space other than Bitcoin is pure crap and pure nonsense. So you're almost defaulted to Bitcoin maximalism. I always promote the book, The Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous, because it sums it up so well as to why all of these ICOs and all of these Bitcoin copycats, why they just can't compete and can't succeed because they're all too centralized. And all of these ICOs, they're just companies. Bitcoin is the only decentralization we have in the space. It's the only thing that has always been decentralized. And Bitcoin has no CEO. Bitcoin has no company. And because it's so decentralized, everyone is incentivized to talk bad about Bitcoin for their own personal gain in some alternative investment. It's just the way it's kind of been for the last 3 or 4 years. And like some of their investments are really bad. And they just make up excuses pretending.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bitcoin is the only thing that makes sense. We're not going to decentralize the world. So it's technologically impossible. But Bitcoin can at least decentralize money for us. And that's why I'm here. I don't know if you guys watch Vortex, but he had an amazing tweet like a year or two ago when he said, I got into this space because I hated that the Federal Reserves are just printing money. And now in crypto, everyone around me just wants to print their own money.
Right. I never thought about that, but that's what altcoins are doing, right? They're just printing new money. And one of the quotes I like best is that Bitcoin had an immaculate conception. So it certainly did. Anywhere else. I mean, and the other quote I like is that Satoshi Nakamoto had a $0 billion budget. He started from scratch. So it was great. It's great coincidence. I just finished the chapter on altcoins in Saifedean's book. And we're very excited to have him out for our conference in 10 days. And we're going to be having a good time, not only learning, but we're going to go out and have another Satoshi Nakamoto Institute dinner the night before. Can you tell us a little about you guys had a dinner at Consensus, didn't you?
I wasn't there.
Oh.
Well, you've seen our conference, right? BitBlock Boom that we've been promoting.
I have seen it. It's been a rough decision whether I should go out there for it because it conflicts with the weekend. I usually hang out with my friends that weekend. There's still a small chance I'll buy a last minute flight, but it's, I would say the chances of are like 33% that I'll be out there.
Well, Tony, if you come, you have a free admission if you do decide to come. Just to make sure you know that. We'd like to have
you're
you there.
You'd be a special guest. And boy, we're going to have a massive Satoshi Nakamoto Institute dinner at Papa's Steakhouse, one of the top 10 restaurants in the country, maybe on the planet.
Awesome.
But we'd like to have you there. So I want to make sure you know that offer is there for you to come to see Safe. And, you know, you've seen the lineup. I saw you make
I've seen the lineup. It's a great lineup.
Yeah, it's a Bitcoin maximalist lineup. I think there aren't that many people doing Bitcoin maximalist things anymore. They're all like ICO events, ICO fests, I call them, where you just go pay money to be pitched all day long.
There are a few coming up. I wanted to do one myself, but organizing a conference is it's a full-time job.
It is.
Recommend it, man. It's an 18-hour-a-day job.
Well, we got Safe this year, and we'd like to have you next year if you don't make it this year. Telling you a year ahead of time.
We can definitely talk about next year, but there are a few. I'll be speaking with Safe at the Honey Badger Conference in Riga coming up in a few months. There's a Bitcoin Maximalist Conference going on, like right now, a building on Bitcoin in Lisbon or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been watching the tweets.
Yeah, there's a few of them out there, but they're like maybe 3% of all the conference space.
Tony, is there anything else? We've been taking up a lot of his time, and this is a great interview. We're going over our normal, but I don't want to keep him on here forever.
Well, I'm disappointed there are no stories from Consensus, so I think maybe we'll have to wrap it up.
Hey, you have training on your website too, though, don't you, Tone?
Yeah, there is a page on my website that's Bitcoin education, so trading education, actually. So if anyone goes to tonevase.com, there is a little section called education. Just click on learn trading within that section. And that's where you can also sign up for my workshops as well, right on tonevase.com.
And then one last question. What is your advice for anyone who now, right now, is saying, I think I want to get into Bitcoin. I've been trying to do this. I'm thinking about getting into it, or I just started getting into it. What advice do you have? Let's just end it up with that kind of.
I mean, I would ask that person what their time horizon is and why they're getting into Bitcoin. If their answer is, I just want to, you know, make some money because it goes up, I would tell them to go and read the fundamentals of Bitcoin. For people that understand the fundamentals of Bitcoin and are willing to hold on to Bitcoin for a while, I always tell them the best time to buy Bitcoin was always yesterday, but they have to be willing to hold it for a long time. If they're looking at it more as, you know, because of money and to get rich, I would say wait for the bull market that can either come at a much lower price or at a much higher price. But I wouldn't risk it at these markets. If you feel like you're the kind of person that's going to panic sell if you lose 40% on the value of your Bitcoin, then this is not the time to buy. You're better off buying it even at 12,000, but then watch your value go up the moment you buy it, never being in the red.
Okay. Tone, thanks for coming on the show. Tony, anything you want to end it up with before we got out of here? Or is there anything you wanted to say, Tone, that we might not ask?
For your audience, if you guys are looking for me, I'm Tone Vase pretty much all over the web. Check me out on Twitter. Check me out on YouTube, especially where most of my work is. And I do speak at a lot of conferences. So just keep an eye on that. See if I'm speaking in your area.
Thanks, Tone, for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking with Tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a gutsy guy. He made that bet with Doug, and it worked out.
And I learned what a dead cat bounce was. I hear that Tone all the time. I never knew what that really – I hear him say it a lot, and I never knew what it actually meant.
Yeah, it's not pretty. That's where we're at today.
It's a dead cat. Well, I appreciate him coming on the show, and a big thank you for everybody that's listening and subscribing. And everybody that's been leaving reviews on iTunes, we've got a ton. Matter of fact, someone emailed me the other day and said, how'd y'all get so many reviews on there? What y'all do? And I said, we just ask people if they like the show to give us a review.
First step, you have to be good.
No. Well, well, we try.
We do our best.
We try. But a big thank you to everybody that's been listening, subscribing. If you are hearing this somewhere you're not subscribed, just go to CryptoCousins.com/subscribe and you'll see all the subscription methods. And don't forget to check out our YouTube channels at YouTube.com/CryptoCousins and YouTube.com/4MinuteCrypto. Tony, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
The only other thing is that we hope to see you Saturday. It's not too late to buy a ticket to BitBlock Boom, and you're going to have a great time. The connections you make now, the people you meet, and the networking that you do at the event will pay off in spades in the future.
Oh, also, I forgot, Tony, somebody who had a ticket can't come, and they said for us just to give their ticket away. So I'm going to say the first person that emails us at thecryptocousins@gmail.com, I'll give them a free ticket. I'll give them that ticket.
Wow, that's very kind.
Yeah, so why don't we do that? We'll go to the first person that emails.
Wow.
TheCryptoCousins@gmail.com. We'll give them that ticket.
Fantastic. Someone's going to get lucky.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, they got to listen all the way to the end of this show to know that.
That's true. So that is going to be a, we're not going to print it anywhere.
Yeah. It's going to be a real fan. So,
it's a test, a real fan.
Yeah. So that's it. So I'm out of here. Thanks, everybody. Love you.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Cousins podcast. Please share this podcast with anyone you know that is interested in cryptocurrency. Your friends can subscribe on iTunes at CryptoCousins.com/iTunes and on Android at CryptoCousins.com/play. If you want to know more about Tony or Gary, just go to TonySicala.com or GaryLeland.com. Make sure and join us on the next episode, and thanks for listening. The Crypto Crypto Cousins podcast and information in the podcast are not intended as investment advice. Cryptocurrencies are risky. Never invest more than you can afford to lose. Always seek professional advice before making any investment. Investing in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies may present tremendous risks. Please understand that you are using any and all information available on or through the Crypto Cousins podcast at your own risk.